If it has wheels and they keep score, it's on Midweek Motorsport every Wednesday evening from 8 p.m.
Welcome to this week's Midweek Motorsport. This is Tim Gray in London with Series 6, Episode 4, for which we will have John Hindhoff later on, but not for this first hour of the show. I am, however, joined by our usual contributors, starting with our Formula 1 correspondent Nick Damon, who is joining us from Silverstone.
Good evening, Tim. Tim, can you lose a bit? It's distorting my sound.
Is that better? How about that? Now?
Who else? Who could that mystery Irish lilt be?
No one can hear that.
Oh.
Nick Damon joins us from Silverstone.
Oh, hello. Hello, listener. Yes, I'm here from Silverstone in my echoey. You've probably seen the pictures of the redeveloped pit lane straight complex, and I'm hiding in one of the buildings that they will later be using to house a white elephant with no communications.
Joining us from Florida, our US correspondent is Declan Brennan.
Yes, from the sleep-in Doss House in Orlando. I have to say, this is literally one step up from a Doss House. And it's amazing. You will always tell self-employed people when they're traveling on business, because they tend to, you know, cut the cost down. And but the sad thing is, I'm a member of a loyalty member of this chain, which is a bit like getting awards points from a, you know, from a soup kitchen. It's
he's got his Salvation Army 5-star badge.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got gold status with the Salvation Army.
Is the sleep in the one the tramps walk past to get to the bus shelter?
Oh yeah. Literally, I've had vagrants. God, not here, mate. Sorry, I'm just walking straight by.
Yeah, I've heard that it's so cheap the bed bugs won't stay.
Which is a relief.
Let's put that joke is copyright Arthur Askey, 1934.
Moving on.
Already?
Yes, tonight we have a special show because this first hour will be the traditional Midweek Motorsport show, minus a couple of features. We won't have time for your letters tonight, but we'll try and squeeze a little bit of everything else in.
I somehow doubt that. It'll just be me arguing.
And then in the second hour of the show, hopefully we will have, we will have a preview to this weekend's Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona.
The second hour of the show, Tim.
John Hindhoff and Marshall Pruitt will be here for that.
Yes. Well, last year's one took 2 hours and was a special show on its own. It was fabulous, but it was a 2-hour show at least. So I would suggest we're possibly entering the realm of overtime here tonight.
I suggest we probably are, because it certainly won't fit into an hour.
After missing last week, I'm not even hearing it, because some...
No, me neither.
Gob Chate didn't record it. I feel I need me 2 hours worth tonight.
Please, please don't open that wound up again. The non-recording wound. Oh, there's been some incriminations going left and forward with that one, I can tell you.
First of all, can I say how happy I am that we are joined by Declan tonight as well, because there was a fear that with him being in Florida, we might not have him tonight.
It's great to have you.
We went to extra effort to get Declan tonight, just in case the listeners missed him and thought that maybe he'd been suspended for making sexist comments about female racing drivers.
Who? What? What? Who made a sexist comment about? Who? What?
Oh, you're so out of the loop. Andy Gray's been sacked by Sky.
Oh yes. That's right. Yes. We never make sexist comments about anybody.
Not at all. Should we get on with the show?
Fairness, makes
the quote's final tap. What's the matter with being sexy?
Every week, we bring you all the motorsport news.
Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport. At RadioLeMans.com.
Nick, you're going to have to ask me to do something here.
Am I?
Yes. What do I normally do at this point?
Shuffle your papers, Tim, please, and tell us what the news is.
Top story is from Formula One, and we're joined by our Formula One correspondent Nick Damon, who hasn't been in Glasgow today.
No, I haven't been in Glasgow today.
Neither
I've been in sunny Birmingham.
If you had been in Glasgow, though, you could have gone to the launch of Force India.
A1GP Scotland.
Force India coming first in the launch season.
Well, that's the first and last time this year, then.
We have they certainly win the award for strongest Friday stroke test driver in the paddock.
I think they also win the award for let's prove once again that Formula One contracts aren't worth the paper they're written on. However many times you say you have got to drive in autosport or autosprint, sorry, probably.
Oh, autosprint. That means that means our favourite Tyrolean pimp is out of a job. Then he can't even get a job herding sheep.
Goats. He's herded them to a brothel, of course.
He'd be a lonely goat herd at this stage there, wouldn't he?
But I think to bring this back to the news, of course, Force India did announce their driver lineup. It's stunning.
Pianist. End of the show.
We'll start with the main driver, which is a stunning pianist come wet weather specialist, apart from when it was really wet in Korea when he fell off a lot, Adrian Sutil, and friend of the show, as you say, and cousin of the Franchitti brothers, and current DTM champion, and man with a nickname that isn't his real name, it's Dave.
It is Dave. DiResta.
Or Paul DiResta. So we now have a dynasty again. We have a dynasty of drivers, so you'll have the Franchitti family will be in Formula One, IndyCar and at Le Mans. How about that? In different guises.
That's pretty good. First Scottish driver in Formula One since David Coulthard.
He obviously got Coulthard in the commentary box now, so he's going to get special treatment. Is it the Scottish Mafia going to, you know, see no evil, hear no evil? So now DC will be saying nice things about both the Red Bulls and his mate.
Hang on, didn't Hootsman Jock McSparren Cairngorm drive a couple of times last year, or am I just making that up for comedy effect?
Not even funny.
No. Oh, hang on. There's the tumbleweed.
Hang on. That's an awful lot more Scottish than Paul DiResta.
It's true.
Have you not heard of the ice cream wars? Because
exactly.
That's where the money comes from.
Hamish Shortbread, he should change his name to. That's very Scottish.
Mook Shortbread, surely.
Yeah, Hamish Mook Shortbread, yes. Carry on.
Force India have chosen the two drivers. I am surprised. I'd love to know the reasoning behind choosing DiResta rather than Hülkenberg. Whether DiResta had a much better written contract than Tony Eliuzzi, or he had a contract that had the backing of Mercedes, of course, who provide the engines, which is probably more likely. Because as I said a couple of times on the show before Christmas, if you're given the choice between Hülkenberg and DiResta, in the cold light of day, purely on experience, you would go for Hülkenberg.
Of course you would.
But you know, as we say, in this day and age, it's not all about that, is it? And obviously, I'm really, really pleased on a patriotic level and a personal level that Paul's got the gig.
Any more to say about Force India?
No,
go on, Nick.
I was just going to say that they've got to try and get themselves out of mid-table mediocrity, and it's you can't really see them breaking into the top five teams. They're going to be in that middle ground, just around and about and slightly above the new guys, I would think. And obviously about four and a half hours ahead of Hispania.
Where do you see them losing any any performance? It is an advantage, I suppose, that they had with their aerodynamics and how quick they were at Spa years ago.
They lost James Key, who's a very good technical director, who's gone to Sauber and kind of carried on with Sauber picking up again. They haven't really got, they're still, you know, if you look at the team, you look at the going into the season, it's not going to take a clever person to work out that Red Bull, Ferrari and McLaren are going to be quick. Mercedes will be better and Renault have no reason to go back. And that's five teams and 10 cars straight away. And then you go, probably, you know, Force India might be able to come close to them, as might Williams, but you know, again, you're scrapping around. Yeah, you've got to say the teams that probably aren't going to be going that quickly are the three new teams in Toro Rosso, but they're going to be scraping around for points, looking for where on their day they can get them, unless they find something special or get a quantum leap, or the new Pirelli tyres just strangely suit their cars. But looking in any logical fashion, they're aiming to be the sixth best team, which is not going to reap them a mass reward of scoring opportunities.
On that subject, Nick, and I know it's something for our F1 preview, but what's the chances of a designer taking a flyer on tyre design and designing a car in a specific way, taking maybe a risk that could pay off? I'm talking about teams lower down the order.
It's been taken away this time, because the main way you can have a gamble and get it right or wrong is in weight distribution. The weight distribution front and rear has been mandated to be 0.1% by the FIA.
Right.
So you could take a risk and make a car that's heavy on the nose, or on the tail. So that is the key thing that affects the balance. All the teams are getting tyres for the wind tunnels, which actually deflect for the first time, because Bridgestone only gave them solid tyres. They're actually getting scale tyres that actually move as they should do for the wind tunnels. So that, again, is going to take away another variable. The teams with the most resources to do well there. There's a possibility that the aerodynamic point of pressure might affect things, but given the fact that they've tested the tyres and they know whereabouts they are, what Pirelli are saying is it's going to be a more front-end tyre, so you're kind of going back, in fact, to how the cars were in 09, because obviously the cars last year had slightly narrower front tyres, which took a bit of front grip away. They're saying they're going to whilst the dimensions are the same, they're saying that the tyres have got more front end. Now, interestingly, of course, we've also lost the double diffuser, so a lot of guys are going to go back to the same sort of general aerodynamic centre of pressure as well, and the same sort of overall grip front and rear. But with a car that's got a slightly longer wheelbase, of course, since 09, they've had to put in the bigger fuel tank. So it's not as unknown as it could be. What I think will hopefully happen on the Pirelli tyres, I'm not sure if this is going to come in later, we were jumping the gun at all here, Tim, but what the interesting announcement this week is the fact, or maybe last week, was the fact that they are going to have tyres that wear out. They're going to aim to do two stops. So
we'll be talking about Pirelli a little bit later on, but we won't necessarily going to mention that. So,
it was ridiculous last year that Sebastian Vettel could do the entire race bar one lap because he had to change tyres at Monza.
Don't forget that was Button did the same thing in Australia where he changed on the second lap and changed onto the alternative tyre and went 52 laps.
The tyres should last. About a third of the race, and then if you're a smooth driver, you can perhaps stretch them out and do it at one stop. But the faster strategy should be two stops, and then you get some variation in there. And that's what Pirelli said they're going to do. So if that's what Pirelli said they're going to do,
it's in Pirelli's interest to do that.
You would argue it's in Pirelli's interest not to do it because tire wear effectively is a negative characteristic of the tire. But if you promote the whole thing earlier, changing tires means
they get to mention Pirelli.
Bridgestone didn't want to do it. They didn't want to see their tyres wearing out because they thought it was, quite a Japanese feeling. It would bring great shame on the corporation to have their tyres wear out, and hence they're always too hard. Pirelli, being a bit more Italian, a bit more up for the sport, have probably decided that, as you say, let's get the tyres changed. And they do, and the vast majority of people will realise, especially after last year when everyone knew the tyres were too hard for competition, that they're deliberately building them soft to make it exciting. They might actually appreciate it. So hopefully they'll reap the rewards.
And you know what will happen? All it will do, and which is a great thing, thank the Lord, and we talked about this in the last couple of years, is all it will do is people with mechanical and basic tyre sympathy will finally have, I would have thought Jenson Button is a perfect example of that, will finally have the opportunity to shine, and that's a great thing.
Well, also, it's going to move a little bit of interest in the suspension design as well, because you can design a rear suspension that within bounds can produce more grip or more wear. There's a lot of things about roll centres and that sort of thing. So, again, people may be prepared to sacrifice a little bit of ultimate grip to make the tyres last longer. But what you might see in that point is you're going to have people whose cars are much more set for qualifying because they can work the rear tyres or the front tyres particularly well over that one lap period. But when running on a longer run, they might find themselves disadvantaged, which is the kind of thing you want. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen because we've had this false dawn before many times, but it's more likely, an extra variable always helps.
Yeah, because what we really, really ought to have is a car that significantly handles significantly differently on lower fuel and with tyres that are 30 laps old. You know, so and therefore it is a much greater test of driving. And the thing is, you're absolutely right as well, because the thing is, we probably won't see it. What we'll discover is, like last year, that, do you remember, I think it was in Malaysia last year, that everybody did their fastest lap with 2 laps to go on 50 lap old tyres. Which is so basically the fuel loads were counteracting the tire wear, and that was a big problem. So, well, at least to me anyway.
Moving on then, and we have some court news now.
Oh, hurrah! Is Max Mosley? Oh, it can't be. You didn't get the Dirty Sexy Mosley jingle. There's Max Mosley rated court news.
This has to be Lotus based court news.
It is, and Lotus says it's delighted that they were successful in court on Monday when the judge Team Lotus is delighted.
Well, they both said that.
Team Lotus is delighted that the judge threw out Group Lotus's application even before hearing the arguments from the barristers on either side.
Yeah, but Group Lotus is delighted that they got a short term before they actually had the full hearing. And apparently they then said that what Team Lotus said wasn't true.
What's happened now is that Lotus are buying the court system, so they'll be going to the Lotus High Court for this, which will be a problem because that's going to be a big issue. Which Judge Lotus presiding over the whole thing?
Yes. Did you discuss March. Lotus last week?
Yes, in massive depth.
Did you come to the conclusion that Team Lotus is the true Lotus and that Renault is just Renault?
We came to the conclusion that currently, as far as the FIA list is concerned, the only entrant called Lotus is the Jarno Trulli Mike Gascoigne team, which is entered as a Lotus, whereas the other one is Lotus just a sponsor of Renault. But, no, we came to no conclusions, because it's just pointless Malaysian posturing.
I came up with a different view on this.
Go on.
When you think about Lotus in Formula 1, you think about
Colin Chapman throwing his hat in the air, Ayrton Senna, Nigel Mansell collapsing, pushing his car across the line in Dallas,
moving chronologically forward then, chronologically forward from Ayrton Senna.
Right, Johnny Herbert, Mika Häkkinen,
Pedro Lamy,
Johnny
Mika
Dumfries,
Häkkinen.
Alessandro Zanardi,
1994.
It was a disaster then.
Julian Bailey.
Do you agree, though, that the 1994 Lotus was still proper Lotus?
No, anything once Peter Wright had bought it wasn't proper Lotus, sorry.
Well, no, you can't say that. He bought it, he owned it.
It's still the same team.
In my book, my big Philip Morris sponsored book of F1, they are still, those years are still counted as part of the official Lotus catalogue by the FIA.
What happened to that team in 1995?
Went bust.
No.
It got sold to Simtek, didn't it?
It got sold to Pacific.
Pacific, yeah, they always get those two mixed up.
Hang on, so Pacific is Lotus. Keith Wiggins owns Lotus.
He owned Lotus, but only until 1996 when he sold it to.
I have no idea.
David Hunt.
Yeah. And David Hunt has sold it to Teddy
Team
Fernandez.
Lotus, yes.
Keith Wiggins literally owned the brand.
Yes. The team.
Oh, racing brand. Racing brand.
He merged his team with the Lotus team.
But you see, what you have to remember is nostalgia wasn't as big as it is now. No. In those days, and the Lotus brand was so tarnished it wasn't worth anything. Suddenly 15 years on, where we all mystery eyed think about Jim Clark, Jochen Rindt, Emerson Fittipaldi,
I still think about Pedro Lamy
pushing the car along. Yeah, well, they forget the last 5 years, which was a disaster, and you kind of,
so this is fade, Team Lotus, by the way, Keith Wiggins owned.
Yeah,
you sort of fade to grey after Nelson Piquet, and that's about it. But yes, so that now everyone thinks Lotus is, it was a non-stop round of super success, and no.
We'll move on, and that involves playing this jingle.
Ooh.
That's enough, thank you.
I was just wondering how long it would take for someone on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective on Facebook to work out what we might want to talk about. It's the theme to Dancing with the Stars, or
Strictly
Come Dancing if you're in the UK, or just Dancing Stars if you're in Austria. And we are.
Oh,
Gerhard Berger.
No.
Niki Lauda.
Niki Lauda, of course.
You're kidding me.
No, he's not on it.
Has he been rented for a quote about it?
He has made quotes about it, and there has been condemnation of those quotes.
Did he make sexist quotes about it?
Austrian gay groups have demanded an apology from former racing driver Niki Lauda after he made disparaging remarks about the pairing of a gay male celebrity with a male dancer. Alphonse Haider, a 53-year-old TV presenter from Vienna, is set to waltz with another man in the forthcoming series of Dancing Stars on ORF. Lauda, the three-time World Formula One champion, told the Austrian daily newspaper Österreich he didn't want to have to explain to his children why two men were dancing together on primetime TV.
I'm really kind of wondering, do you think Niki Lauda, his day, he gets up, has a cup of tea, or probably coffee in Austria, gives a couple of quotes to someone, sits down, reads a paper, gives some more quotes, has a bit of brunch, gives some more quotes, just like, he does get rung up by everyone in Austria, Niki, what do you think about the shortage of water in Eritrea, Niki, what do you think about Jordan Alex Reeves splitting, I mean, is there anything he doesn't comment on?
You have to remember, this is a man who, for years after his accident, sold the rights to the top of his head. He is very much a man who understands the commercial value of himself,
yes.
Both parts of his body and what's coming out of his mouth.
The German tabloid Bild asked Lauda if it was really so bad for two men to dance together. No, said Lauda.
They are dancing.
As long as they do it at home and not on TV when children are watching. Now, Nick, have you met Matthias Lauda?
Yes. Where are you going with this?
Do you think that Matthias Lauda might be at all puzzled by the concept of homosexuality, given that he's nearly 30?
No. Let's leave that one there. Keep going.
So,
has he ever raced on the same team as Ralf Schumacher or Adrian Sutil? That's nothing to do with anything. That is just a question generally with no relevance to anything else
That's really unfair. Just because you're a pianist with lovely hands and you walk in a bit of a feet way.
Niki Lauda insisted he wasn't homophobic and that he would not mind at all if his son
was
gay.
Some of my best friends are puffs, is what he said, of course.
He actually said, I employ loads of gay people on my airline.
Of course he did! Of course he has airline, yes! Plunging directly into the massive, pushing the huge button marked stereotype.
Apparently, I have heard. If you've not heard, that he's going to start employing Andy Gray as his HR and tolerance officer.
Christian Hergel, the chairman of Vienna-based gay rights group Hersey, said, "We're really shocked."
Isn't that a good name for a gay rights group? Hello, it's Hersey.
We're really shocked and very surprised that Mr. Lauda harbours such prejudice against homosexuals to make such an unjustified attack. The group has invited Lauda to the city's Rainbow Ball next month in a bid to educate him about homosexuality.
Just fantastic.
I demand that ORF Director General Alex Vrabets, who is in an upright marriage, stops this gay dance number, and that the PR crazy Alphonse Haider is not permitted to put on a gay show on state-owned television.
Now, don't we have an issue where in Austria this is quite a sensitive subject? Because am I wrong in thinking that the Austrian Prime Minister was outed as being gay, and his lover or he shot himself, and this is in the last couple of years. It was all very so. It's a quite a sensitive issue there. So, particularly in the, it's clearly not as progressive as a country as others in Europe. One would say.
Let's be honest. Austria is kind of known, as you say, for being a little bit conservative with a small C. Or put it this way: if they had the chance to invite someone from Germany back in again, out of 1938, they probably would.
Alex Vrabets, who, if you have been following this story, will know is in charge of the TV company, said, "I don't choose Mr. Lauda's pilots, he doesn't choose our dancers." Should we move on?
I think he was talking about his trolley dollies, not his pilots, in all fairness. Although that the stereotype isn't necessarily that the pilots tend to, you know,
on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective on Facebook, stop digging. Adrian Michael Reese says, just because my name is Adrian, it doesn't mean I'm a pianist with lovely hands. Pirelli news now.
Oh, more Pirelli news.
Yes. This is the bit of Pirelli that we haven't already covered. Pirelli said it could run with coloured sidewalls on its tyres in Formula 1.
Isn't that, you know, I say coloured anymore, you have to say mixed race sidewalls.
But this is the God almighty. This is the innovation Champ Car, of course, came up with first, then stolen by IndyCar, mm-hmm. and finally Formula One is adopting. Champ Car actually very forward thinking in a number of areas. Clearly, you'd never see a Champ Car race in Austria based on how progressive they were, but they were, you know, instrumental in an awful lot of things, that and particularly the whole option prime tire thing and the colours, and it's finally worked its way into F1, and I think that's probably a good tang.
Last week on the show, Nick, did you discuss the Rome Grand Prix?
No. We meandered for 2 hours and talked about most things, but we didn't talk about the Rome Grand Prix because, of course, there isn't going to be a Rome Grand Prix.
Well, there isn't any more, no. Okay, so we'll forget that and move
on.
So
that means still the reigning champion of the Rome Grand Prix is Spartacus.
Yes.
Is this going to turn? Is the Rome Grand Prix going to, emerge maybe, I don't know, early next year or late next year, and pretty much every year around calendar time to rival the Manhattan / New York Grand Prix in terms of the best potential / fictional Grand Prix that will never actually happen?
Well, since Korea let the side down my hold in the race, yeah, absolutely.
I know, exactly. They really let us down. Anyway, carry on, Tim.
Thank you. Last week, you definitely talked about the Monte Carlo Rally.
On account of there being... I heard through Twitter or something or somewhere else that there was actually a Monte Carlo Rally live guest type person on.
Yes.
There was.
Live from the service park, I hear.
Well, he was live from his hotel room, actually, because
he'd left the service park. It was quite late at night, I suppose.
I'd like to point out, he actually was live by Skype on an iPhone, because everyone keeps knocking... Well, John keeps knocking iPhones.
In fact, John told me that, and he was very impressed. Hindy was very impressed at the iPhone.
If you knew how crap my iPhone was, you would be impressed.
Skype on my Android phone has been working brilliantly for 2 years. Anyway,
other phone operating systems are available,
but Android's best.
Not as good.
Peugeot Michelin, French driver winning it. Have you ever heard of a French driver called Brian before, though?
Well, wasn't the snail in Magic Roundabout that was a French program called Brian?
The snail was called Brian. Was the Magic Roundabout French, and was the snail?
Oh,
French?
Yeah, Serge. What's his name? Was it?
Serge, I'm not Gainsbourg? Sure if he...
No, that would be Jatame, the snail.
I was going to say, Serge Gainsbourg's name was Brian? What? I'm really missing something here now.
No, to answer sensibly the question there, no, I haven't heard of a driver called Brian before.
No. Brian Bouffier is the man who won the centurion anniversary of the
Brian.
Rally Monte Carlo. Second, Freddie Loix. Third, Guy Wilkes. And fourth, Stefan Sarrazin.
Surely it's Ewills, yeah. If you're going to say it right.
But he's only fourth, because he dropped back, didn't he, to let Guy get third, because Guy's doing the whole season.
Yes, and Sarrazin is...
Is Wilkes likely to win the IRC, then, this year?
It's possible.
I don't know, it depends how many interlopers turn up for the odd race and win quite easily.
Well, this is the thing. Is that not part of the danger of the attraction of the IRC having quite good rallies, that the manufacturers might suddenly say, ooh, we can jump in this and might have a chance of winning it and, you know, and grabbing some headlines, because playing on the, and, you know, we talked about this before, playing on the public's lack of clear understanding of the one being a World Rally Championship event and one being an IRC event, therefore basically saying, look at our man, he won a really good international rally. You probably don't know the difference and you don't care. In their big press ads.
Emma Crawley on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective says, yes, a Magic Roundabout was originally French, but the names were thought up by Emma Thompson's dad, who revoiced
the market. The scripts he wrote had no bearing on the original scripts either.
That's very true. Dougal and the Blue Cat, Mark Kermode, if anybody listens to Mark Kermode, yes. Going on about how great it is. I actually am a huge fan of Dougal and the Blue Cat. It's got some of the greatest weird surrealist lines, and of course everybody thought, oh man, Emma Thompson's dad must have been clearly on something when he wrote it, because it was so bizarre. But no, a teetotaler and a perfectly sensible normal man he was too, just a bit mad.
More news now, and police in Finland are expected to charge a 44-year-old man with manslaughter following a speedboat crash in the country last summer. The man who cannot be named for legal reasons is alleged to have been at the control of the boat. I don't think anyone heard you, Dex.
But we all know who it is. It's all over the internet.
Tamisari last
June. Original news story, and the original news story went out that it was him. That's
yes,
ridiculous.
But as soon as charges are... brought, then you can't mention
only in
the
only
person.
In Finland, not here.
And bloke sitting in a crappy hotel in Orlando can't mention that it's JJ Leto.
I mean, now you hear the door will be brought down. You have two Finnish FBI agents will come in and just drag you away.
Laugh Plod has just come to the door.
No, Laugh Plod. I tell you what, the biggest problem you've got when you find out that Raikkonen is driving the police car, you never get to the station.
Yes, let's move on. Reigning FIA Formula 2 champion Dean Stoneman has been diagnosed with testicular cancer.
Dreadful. What a pain in the bollocks, obviously, literally speaking. That's dreadful, the poor man.
Well, hopefully it caught it early and it'll just put a temporary pause and he'll be back again next year.
Dean says it was caught early and the doctors expect him to make a full recovery.
And hopefully a quick one, because, I'm sure he was thinking in similar respects. From his point of view, it's such a pivotal time in his career.
Yeah.
You know, let's hope, fingers crossed, that it's something they can catch quickly and it doesn't overly affect him, because he literally is on the fastest part of his upward curve right now in terms of getting opportunities and making a name for himself. And this is, and we all know what the junior formula are like. For if you pick the wrong drive or you're out of a drive for a year, you can get forgotten so quickly. So I just hope it gets sorted out very quickly and it doesn't hamper his progress too much.
He has been told he won't be able to race this year. He'd been due to race in the Formula Renault 3.5 series, but he'll be missing that this year, and probably missing that forever if we move on to our next story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember last October?
Yes, I remember last October. It was a month. It was between September and November.
The show where I joined you live from a hotel overlooking Albert Park.
Yes.
When it was very early in the morning. And I had some exclusive news which no one else had, and you and John went off onto a tangent and we never actually got to say the news until 2 weeks later when it had been publicly released.
Was that the Sebastian Loeb not getting a license news?
No, that was the Red Bull Ring returning to the
DTM
calendar news.
Yeah.
Well, more news. Renault are to stop supporting the Renault World Series at the end of this season.
Hang on, so how are those two things related? Are you just telling us this is now another one of your breaking news stories?
This is another Midweek Motorsport exclusive that nobody else has.
Oh, good, I'm going to tweet about it right now.
Breaking how do you know that then, Tim?
Sources.
Is this because Renault are basic? Well, just what? I don't understand, why would they do that? They've built the whole 3 day thing that works so well around it.
Perhaps they think that the marketing value of it is reduced to a level where it's no longer financially
viable.
Well,
in all fairness, we have too many series at that level. So one foot fell by the wayside. Whilst I don't have anything against 3.5 on itself. One less wouldn't do any harm.
As I understand now, it, the 3 days are what are going to be axed, but the championship could well continue as a support race to another European
Renault
series.
Open wheel series. Hang on, so when are they pulling out? This year or next year?
At the end of this season, I'm told.
Wow. And is it what's the series officially called now? I don't even know anymore. Is it the Renault 3.5 series or the World Series?
It's the Renault 3.5 series, but as I say, we expect the series to continue, but not.
It's very really. It's an expensive series. Cars aren't cheap.
Is selling parts.
Mm. Well, I'm still saying that. You know, well, fair enough. Interesting.
Interesting indeed. And that brings us to the end of the news.
Wow.
Which means we get to move on to this.
All the news from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it here.
Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
It's time for Ear on the Oval, about an hour ahead of our normal plan. But don't forget, in the second hour and possibly into a third hour, and hopefully not into a fourth hour of
now, even I couldn't cope with that.
It's our Rolex 24 Daytona preview. John Hintoff will be here. He's resting himself during this first hour, just in case it does go a little bit long. And he'll be joined by Marshall Pruitt for that.
He's warming up on the sidelines, you know, doing those stretches and running around behind the goal, flicking the V's at the opposition.
I think it's a guaranteed touchback at the 20, I think.
So he's flicking the V's at other podcasts. I'm not sure how that works, but that's what he's doing.
They've got some big guests on tonight. Dario Franchitti will be joining them.
Ooh,
who's Dario? Which basically, from things I've heard about some of the things that he's been saying recently, on and off the record, he's suddenly his tongue is loose, and that he's getting quite happy to speak his mind. One feels.
Listen.
Maybe he suddenly thinks he's 55 or something, or 80, and he now thinks he can say what he likes and he can reverse out of his driveway without looking like old people do and stuff like that.
Like Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods has been living in that part of Florida too long, and he just thought he could do that like everybody else does.
Being chased by a crazed Norwegian with a golf club.
That's also true.
She could chase me with a golf club anytime. I sat beside her before they were married, when she was still just 1999 Carnoustie. I sat in the Players Lounge. I sat beside her when she was still just Jesper Parnevik's au pair, and my goodness, she was beautiful.
Rolex 24 at Daytona preview, which is on in the after 9 o'clock UK time, and will form the second part of tonight's Midweek Motorsport. Also features an interview I did with Ryan DL earlier in the week.
Oh,
so there we are.
Are we going to be playing Guess the Accent with Ryan DL as well? Because it's fantastic.
He's quite clearly Scottish, and I do ask him about being Scottish.
It's got a comedy American lilt to it, though. It's tremendous.
No, because Tim interviewed him here, you see, so he probably had gone for... It's like, I was in the car with John. Now, John's, you know, when he does the show, he's kind of like, you know, faintly northeastern. His mate phoned up from Sunderland. He turned into like a boy from the... You know, it turned out like an episode of The Likely Lads. It was unbelievably thick. I go, what did you say, John? As soon as he's off the phone with his Geordie friend, he's back to being kind of just slightly kind of, you know, comedy northeastern.
Nick, I get accused of that when I ring my parents. My wife says she can't understand me because my accent gets thicker and I speak faster.
Hang on, that assumes like she can understand you to begin with.
Yeah, well, that's very true. Oh, breaking news. My wife on Facebook has just told me she promises not to call me in the middle of the show this week.
One down, one to go. Dish Network, now's your chance. Let's get on with Ear on the Oval, and the outspoken chairman of Speedway Motorsports Incorporated, Bruton Smith, has said NASCAR may have to abandon the race for the chase for the cup for the quest for the thing.
What,
if fans
rubbish.
Continue to show disapproval.
Well, every year the season starts with a new talking point that fills the media about how to fix it, and every year, the following year, they fix it. That, like, for example, it was standardized start times a couple of years ago, so last year they changed to standardized start times, and this year they've quietly announced, hasn't really made the public, that they're going back to letting the promoters start whenever they like, and because that didn't work, because nobody on the TV audiences, nobody cared, and the audiences went down, and now it's the chase has to go, and the point system doesn't work, and it's a farce. It's an absolute farce. It's like all they're doing all they're doing is basically rearranging the chairs on the Titanic, because what they refuse to do is plug the hole that the iceberg has caused. They won't improve the racing. The racing isn't improving, and the way to improve it would be, and we've talked about it before, is to severely truncate the races, even go to dual style heats and finals and do something like that. It's just not working. Bruton Smith is talking about that while, and I'll get back to that in a minute, but while the head of Speed TV is talking about the fact, and the head of Fox, I should say, Fox Sports, is saying the races are too long and they have to be at most an hour, 3 hours long. So basically, it's in a bit of trouble and there's a lot of head scratching.
Can I read out a quote here?
Of course you can.
This is from Bruton Smith. He says, "I want a big difference between first and second place. As a race fan, I'm going to get very interested. What if it's $400,000 difference between first and second? You know there's going to be a fight to the finish on that one. These race fans deserve that. All of a sudden, points play second fiddle to that. That's what I'd like to see. Then I wouldn't have to worry about the points."
Well, the points... the point system, and we just talked about this off air before we came on, and let's do it again now, is the point system that they are about to replace. They're announcing the new point system tomorrow. I'm going to say a big thumbs up to Alan Wedge, who is has a blog called The Serious Wedge, and he did something that I know a lot of our listeners will probably go off and do themselves. He went and did a direct comparison of last year's points with the new points system, and it's exactly the same. So they've done nothing. They've done nothing other than giving us a really, really, really stupider version of the same thing. 43 points for a win, 1 point for 43rd.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
Is that not more sensible, though, than 185 points for a win and 34 being 43rd?
It's more sensible insofar as it's arguably easier to understand, but ultimately, the point system will make no difference in terms of the way people will approach the races. Matt Kenseth is still going to work his way around from qualified 26th and finished 8th every week, make the chase and do nothing and not win a race. You know, the reason the chase exists is because of Matt Kenseth. Matt Kenseth won the championship with one win as opposed to Ryan Newman. We've talked about this every week, it seems. Ryan Newman won 8 races and didn't win the title. And they went, we can't have this. So we can't have this. We need to invent some sort of playoff system that encourages wins. So they did.
Well, I don't understand. Okay, and breathe. What I don't understand, and we've had this before, is why they have to have a point system that's like a North London primary school.
Exactly.
Why does everyone have to get points? Why can't... And there's no other championship where everyone gets points, unless there's not enough people that enter, which happens occasionally in small championships. But, you know, it's a top 10 in F1.
NASCAR, if it's not anything, if it's not a bastion of Republican, conservatism, and yet it has the most liberal point system. Its point system is everybody gets a trophy day. You know, it's ridiculous. And this actually ties in with the prize fund. The prize fund can't go to everybody because what's underlying this is they're so desperate to have 43 cars full grids, they don't want to be seen to have anything less than full grids. So therefore we end up, we talked about this before, that they promote a series which allows the starter parkers to come in, who have been, Eddie Gossage, who is a mouthpiece for Bruton Smith at Speedway Motorsports, has basically said starting parkers are stealing money from me by doing this. Yeah, but then change the system so the top 20 get points. Then you don't have point races, and give it so much more points and so much more money for wins, and you'll see people wanting to race for wins. But it's not going to change. This changes nothing. It changes nothing in terms of the attitude of the drivers. It's ridiculous.
No.
Is there anything else you want to say on NASCAR, Dex? Or should we move on to IndyCar?
I don't know what you're going to talk about in IndyCar, but I will happily move on to IndyCar, yes. There's lots to talk about.
Simona De Silvestro.
Ah, yes. This is actually really, really interesting. This is, and you, Mr. Tim, go and put your junior Formula hat on, because you should know all about this.
Hmm.
Why is the sponsorship, her new sponsorship, which is basically the nuclear clean energy lobby,
yeah,
why is that rather ironic in terms of it going to Simona De Silvestro?
Because she's Swiss.
Was she sponsored by CND?
she's from Switzerland, where they don't have nuclear power.
Well, no, first of all, A, 2008, she was sponsored by the same people at Newman Walks when she raced for Newman Walks in Atlantics. 2009, she moved teams to Team Stargate Worlds. Newman Walks were running John Edwards and Mr. Niemela. You may know where I'm going
Marcus,
with this.
Yeah.
Marcus Niemela, who were then at the time sponsored by the Nuclear Clean Energy, blah, 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 blah. It was said that Marcus Niemela was brought back into the series at the last round and was funded just to be a spoiler to help John Edwards win the championship. And what did he do in the last round of the series, sponsored by Nuclear Clean Energy?
He
set off an atomic bomb and destroyed the race.
No, he took Simona de Silvestro out by doing a Zanardi at the corkscrew.
Yeah.
On the second lap or the first lap, giving her no chance of winning the title.
I'll tell you what, that just sounds like a really bad day. He took Silvestro out and then gave her a Zanardi with a corkscrew. You know?
Oh my God. You had to talk about yourself for a minute.
For those of you who haven't read this story, this will keep Simona in IndyCar for the next three seasons in the number 78 car. The 22-year-old Swiss driver finished 19th overall last season, but she was the Indy 500 Rookie of the Year. She finished 14th in that race, having started 22nd.
Do you know what also guaranteed him?
Mm-hmm.
It'll guarantee her nomination for Woman of the Year for the next 3 years as well, and maybe a Motorsport Annual Awards.
She had
Dex always votes for her.
She had two top 10 finishes out of last season's 17 races and led four laps. And
right,
Declan Brennan should now have recovered.
Yeah, stop reading Wikipedia, and let's get to the real point of this, which is that she has got a 3-year deal. Nobody in IndyCar, other than the top two teams, really have announced 3-year deals in forever. You know, none of the teams of their level, of HVM's level, have ever, you know, if you think about Conquest,
in,
you think about,
in terms of recently, none of them have
no,
ever
not
believed
recently,
they'll
no.
still be there in 3 years' time.
Exactly. None of them have announced 1-year deals with anything. So it's a very significant that she's coming in with a 3-year deal. It's great. Delighted for the series and for her. She's a real, real star. Amongst the core fan base, she's hugely popular. She's got taken over that Sarah Fisher mantle of being the very popular, let's call a spade here, less abrasive girl in the paddock, and people are really, really responding to her, and so it's great news. And she, you know, that team, if that team have a lot of talent on the engineering side, like Michael Cannon. They showed last year when they could get her into the lightweight car that she could run pretty quickly. She was great in Edmonton and Mid-Ohio in the middle of the season. Then they had their issues, of course, with losing a car in Texas that went up in flames. But I think with everything they learned last year, with a proper operating budget, a working budget, I think they could be very good this year. Not obviously running at the front, but she could be certainly more consistently in the top 10, which would be great for the series and great for her. And she was at Baltimore yesterday doing some, or on Monday, I should say. And of course, I was able to fulfill a slight bit of my midweek motorsport contract because I drove pretty much through the center of Baltimore on Sunday, the day before she was there.
Well done.
That works for me.
Yeah, okay. As long as that fulfills the criteria, then we're all right.
There's another European driver who looks like he's going to get a seat in IndyCar this season as well, is Andretti.
I beg your pardon? Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Another European driver is expected to get a seat in IndyCar this season.
Yeah, like Adam Carroll was. Yeah, Andy Soucek. Andy Soucek is the latest. It's like Michael Andretti is a Rolodex of drivers that sound cool to get involved with, as long as there's an asterisk that says, if we find the money. You know, next week they'll be saying, you know, it'll be Sebastian Bourdais or Nico Hülkenberg. You know, it's just getting silly.
Barry Rabbit, that's who you should get.
Baza Bunny. No, I don't think so. Although he could do a great job. Barry, if you're listening, we love you. You're really great, and you'd be brilliant in IndyCar. In brackets, probably not. Now, so carry on.
I think that's all the IndyCar news I've got as well, actually.
Wow, America done.
Yeah, NASCAR. Well, there's nothing really happening. There's the NASCAR. We've had fun with this before, but the NASCAR media tours are on at the moment. And if there's anything that proves that Twitter doesn't need to exist, it's the tweets from the various journalists going through the NASCAR race shops. So what they do is they do their media tour by effectively opening up all the race shops throughout the week, and everybody goes in and says, "Who cares? God almighty!"
And then they just go down to Charlotte and have a big coach trip.
Yeah, woohoo! I just had lunch with Ned Jarrett. Shut up!
Wasn't even the Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
Bike news.
Hey. Ooh.
Please, huge swathes of this entire Midweek Motorsport listener audience, which of course are solely underserved or wholly underserved by bikes, bike news, because Tim has decided that nobody likes bikes, particularly him, and he controls the faders.
Tim just said bike news, meaning there's going to be some.
Yeah. I know, I'm very excited, and it's well done everybody for persevering and waiting for bike news.
Valentino Rossi. Mm-hmm. Says his shoulder still hurts.
Yes, and he's. But how much does it really hurt, and how much is it just psychological? Is the question.
Mm.
Because he was apparently he when it was this Camino de Campino thing when the Ferrari and
Ducati 2011.
Who get together to show the fact skiing. That they're sponsored by Philip Morris, even though we're not, honestly, even though we have their corporate colours and they're paying us lots of money. He was when he first saw the journalist, he was holding out an effete weak little right arm because his shoulder was so bad for a handshake. And then by the end of the week, he was doing kart racing and snowboarding and still saying his shoulder was bad. Now, in fairness,
just to be fair to him, he was involved in that hugely new trendy sport that's going to be on ESPN next year, which is the banging a nail into your own shoulder, which is the ultimate extreme sport. So that's probably one of the reasons his shoulder hurt.
Speaking of someone who's had reconstructive shoulder surgery, so I think I know a bit about this.
And this is why Nick Damon's on this show, not because he's ever been to a MotoGP race.
I've been to MotoGP races.
That's what I said. That's not why we're asking you about this.
No, but interestingly, to get back to full strength, if he had the same operation as me, which is a modern one, so it's most likely he did, will take you something in the region between about 8 to 10 weeks, which would put him stat bang on with the start of the Grand Prix season. The only thing is, though, that is for full mobility. That's not necessary for full strength.
Nick, here's a question for your wheelhouse, and I think you would probably be able to answer it better than I would. Is there any issue? Well, actually, a couple of things. One, if he's got a bad shoulder, why was he doing additional testing of the new or of a superbike this week, which seems insane? But also,
he was.
Misano.
Well, that's I've not even seen that report.
Valentino Rossi this week has been testing a 1198 cc
right.
Ducati.
That's a road bike. That's a road bike. Now, the reason for that, if he's done that as a road bike, so he's not taking it. So, super bike, of course, Declan, is the sort of stuff which is run by Max Biaggi in the championship. If he's just testing a road bike, or even that is effectively a form of more of a form of a workout than anything to do with. It's actually working the correct muscles to a lower level.
That's why I asked.
And he's not allowed. Don't forget, he's not allowed to run a MotoGP bike. So if he wants to actually practice straining the muscles in the correct way, then going onto a superbike is the best way. Obviously, he's not going to go too quick and fall out. Because the point about it is, he can still ride a bike, and he can still ride a bike quickly. What he couldn't do, was because of the pain and, I would think, probably shoulder instability, which is really off-putting when it happens to you, I can tell you. And he was having probably heavy braking because he didn't have the confidence in his arms, basically. So if he's trying to, if he is running a superbike, and be that a road bike or an Italian superbike, then that is merely just a form of workout because it's the only thing he's allowed to do. He can't run a MotoGP bike, so it's working with the correct muscles.
That brings me to my next question, which I was going to ask anyway, but is therefore, even if he's not fully fit, then surely there'll be an issue when he comes to getting a base setting for the MotoGP bike, because we all know that the rule of thumb has been for pretty much forever that Ducati build bikes that go at 8,000 miles an hour but don't go around corners. So He obviously, a lot of, pretty much all of his work will be in handling. Now, if he has issues, physical issues, surely that is going to be a huge issue when it comes to actually properly setting, getting a baseline setting for the bike.
The thing is, you see, Dex, is that what was never really got to the bottom of, and it's fair enough, because it's what was the problem he was having during the season. Was it caused by pain, or was it caused by a physical instability in the shoulder? Okay, which can happen because when you separate your shoulder or dislocate your shoulder, you loosen all the ligaments, and in extreme cases, and he said he had a very bad one, the actual bits can move around in the shoulder when they're supposed to be set straight. So if it was pain, well, you normally think that wouldn't affect too much. They just give him an injection before it starts. So it sounds like he had instability issue. Now, if he's had it put back together again, it is no longer the stability is fine. It's all about building up the strength. So for testing, surprisingly, that wouldn't be as big an issue, because you can do 20 minutes and have a long break. You just do lots of short runs. Obviously, for a Grand Prix where you have to do the 45 minutes, it's different. So okay,
even with heavy braking, even if he's not fully fit and he's getting on the bike, even if he's only doing a few, well, I suppose that's the issue. You'll have to get on the bike to find out. But if they go to somewhere like Misano, Misano's got the long straight, doesn't it? Where that bike will be under massively heavy brake. Maybe that's why they went to Misano with the superbike, because that track has hugely heavy braking at the end of the straight. So I'm just wondering if maybe we'll know, I suppose, once the testing starts, if he's not doing as much, not taking as the bulk of the testing.
Shall we hear what he had to say about his?
Why not?
Misano, he said. The shoulder is painful, especially under braking, when the front area hurts, where they stitched the tendon. Movement is stable enough. We're also not doing bad with endurance. Apart from that, it hurts a lot and isn't very strong.
Yeah, so because basically what they do is they take the tendon, which runs across the front of your chest to your shoulder, they fold it over itself and staple it down. It's quite a basic thing. It's basically they take a little loop and stitch it, because of course, when ligaments stretch, they don't go back again, unlike muscles.
Correct.
So you have to
it's a suture, effectively.
But his shoulder is now stable. That's the point. It was unstable last year. They've now stabilized it. He won't have full mobility yet, and it will hurt. But the hurt bit is something that bike riders can sort out either by just getting through it or by having an injection. It's whether it's got that overall strength to last 45 minutes. Now, I think that it'll really depend on what the individual recovery plan is. He's only, six, seven weeks after he did it, so he would just be now doing the various stretching exercises to get the momentum back into it. There's the movement back into it.
Very quickly, let's move on to this.
Mono Estende.
It's news in Spanish.
No, we knew that.
Schumacher susceptible and Mariasi NL Simulador.
No. I'm leaving that one to Nick. I'm not saying anything with that.
Well, Schumacher, he's and someone who's married and arsey.
His wife's a bit arsey, yeah. He's susceptible to
it. I don't know. No. Which Schumacher is married but likes a bit of arsey?
Michael Schumacher, Mariasi en el simulador aunque esto no afecta a su rendimiento en comparación su compañero de equipo Nico Rosberg.
Oh, this is about a similar door. They did a comparison to the one that Rosberg had, and he got really arsy about it because Rosberg's front door was way nicer than his.
Ah, that's his wife's arsy.
Yeah, that's right. I presume it's the front door, not of his home, but of his motorhome at the paddock.
El siete veces campeón del mundo quedó por detrás de su joven compatriota en cuanto a ritmo en 2010, aunque el equipo de Brackley asegura que sus actuaciones en el simulador no tienen la culpa.
Ah, well, see, apparently what actually happened, did you hear that? When he got to see his motorhome in Brackley, he found that it had the door from a Fiat Ritmo, which he wasn't at all pleased about, and he wanted to know what that was all about, because apparently Nico Rosberg had one from a Mercedes SL.
Well, of course, with Schumacher's one, when he saw it, literally as he was looking at it, it rusted and fell off. No wonder his wife was arsey.
Yes.
De vez en cuando, a lo largo de su carrera, Michael ha sido susceptible a marearse en el simulador, dijo el equipo a la BBC.
Oh, I see. So, now I see what happened. Yeah. What happened was, you probably know, a while ago, he went to Top Gear to pretend to be the Sting before he found out it was Ben Collins. And that's where he got a different car door. He got the Rover car door that fell off Jeremy Clarkson's car earlier. And he wanted to say that was better than the Fiat Ritmo. But then, unfortunately, his wife was still upset about that one and said, no, you must have as good a door as Nico Rosberg's.
On the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective, Steve Allen says, I went out early, and when I switched on the car radio, She Cell Sanctuary was on. I knew it was Wednesday. Emma Crawley says, is there a way to give Dex an electric shock when he starts to ramble for no reason at all?
I have no idea what she's talking about, because I've been doing the same shtick for 6 years. So I literally have no idea what she's talking about. Nothing to see here. Carry on.
And now you're a Dalek.
Emma Crawley also says, this advert has just appeared at the side of my Facebook page. NASCAR Live TV Sprint Car from Premier Sports TV, Sky Channel 433. Get 2 months half price. Use promo code P248 to sign up. So if you're interested in watching NASCAR in the UK, the promo code 248 gets you the first 2 months half price. That is all we've got time for.
What is Premier Sports?
It's a sports channel.
It's on Channel 433.
Irish Gaelic football and lots of
boxing. I know what it is. It's you know what Premier Sports is? Premier Sports is basically the same boys out of the ashes of Satanta.
Yes.
It's the boys from Satanta.
Anyway, they're showing Sprint Cup.
Was that a really bad sequel to Boys in Black Stuff?
In the next hour of the show, John Hindhoff and Marshall Pruitt will be here to preview the Rolex 24-8 Daytona. That may well be in the third hour of the show, and fourth hour of the show, if last year was anything to go by. From Declan and Nick and myself, it's a very good night.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemon.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.